Welcome to the Kol Hadash Podcast. This is episode 5 of season 14. This episode features the Torah reading from Kol Nidre, recorded live at High Holiday Services on October 11th, 2024.
Once upon a time, there was one and only one Jewish temple, the Jerusalem Temple. Can you imagine one institution claiming loyalty and obedience from all Jews? That Jerusalem Temple received sacrifices and gifts from all over the Jewish world, and therefore it was a rich target for invaders. And just imagine the conflicts between rival priestly families. In the last centuries BCE, multiple sects of Judaism shouted at each other exactly what we heard on Rosh Hashanah. You're doing Judaism wrong. You're running the temple wrong. And yet, for all those conflicts, there was one place to argue about, one ritual practice that set the template. Diaspora synagogues hundreds of miles away included pictures from the Jerusalem temple service in their floor mosaics, which we can still see today. Jews then believed that the high priest in Jerusalem was the holiest person of the holiest tribe, of the holiest of all peoples. On Yom Kippur, the holiest day, he would enter the holiest spot, in the holiest building, in the holiest city, in the holiest land, a place called Kodesh HaKodashim, the Holy of Holies. And when the high priest uttered the holiest word of the holiest language, the name of the God who shall not be named, everything holy in the world united in that one moment. And then, in 70 of the Common Era, the Jerusalem Temple was destroyed. Priests could offer no sacrifices. The nascent rabbinic movement was left standing, but aghast. They had to preserve some kind of Judaism through the power of persuasion, but it seemed like everything was up for grabs. Everything could fall apart. If there was no Holy of Holies, how could anything be holy? How would Judaism survive? Does that feeling I just described of everything falling apart sound familiar? We've had disagreements and arguments in our history, but this moment feels different. People out there seem more and more lonely. Social media has accelerated and deepened our divisions. Generations are strained as change accelerates. Our scarcest resources seem to be patience, tolerance, and respect. We can ask whether the glass of our society is half empty or half full, but does anyone think it is completely full? Some people always see the negative, some prefer to see the positive. Some need to know how the glass started to know which way the trend lines are pointing. Lately, though, those lines seem to be pointing down. The glass is cracked. There are dates in living memory that all seem to point downward. September 11th, January 6th, October 7th. We live with the conflicts these dates represent. 23 years after 9/11, Islamic fundamentalists are still trying to attack the West. In Austria this past summer, they targeted a Taylor Swift concert. In the United States, we cannot escape the aftermath of January 6th and the political and cultural war it both reflected and accelerated. The Black Sabbath of October 7th that produced and is still producing terrible destruction, the suffering of hostages and their families, the suffering of the Palestinian human shields behind whom Hamas hides, and the regional conflict Israel faces with Hezbollah in the north, Houthis in the south, Iran to the east. We'll talk more about the Jewish present tomorrow morning. Tonight we consider how we live with our friends, our rivals, even our enemies, in our own neighborhood. Forget the neighborhood. Can we even live with other people we like? In 1970, two-thirds of American adults under 50 were married with kids. Today, it's only one-third. Today, 30% of Americans live alone. and how many married couples have improved their relationships with separate sinks, separate bathrooms, even separate bedrooms, and they love each other. Seemingly record numbers of adult children are alienated from their parents, whoever started it, whoever's fault it is. Is it stress or anxiety? Is it jealousy or rivalry or unresolved psychological conflict? Is it microplastics in our brain? Or maybe it's because we hear so much terrible news all day long that we are primed for anger and disappointment. 30 years ago, the news might have been really bad. Local news back then followed the same rule: if it bleeds, it leads. But the news was only on at limited times. The newspaper came out once a day. Now, bad news is available 24/7 and as close as our desire to pick up our phone. Only so much happens in a day. So you can hear the same bad news over and over and over. Aside from reading news outlets on my own, I also receive regular email updates on events in Israel and the Jewish world from the Anti-Defamation League, the Secure Communities Network, the American Jewish Committee, the Chicago Board of Rabbis, J Street, Teruah, the Rabbinic Call for Human Rights, and many more. I have to remind myself that the same event mentioned several times in several different emails is still only one event. If you've never heard the term doom scrolling, you know what it is. It's looking through social media or the news to see the latest version of everything going to hell. And nothing we do seems to help. It feels like collapse is coming. I repeat myself, we are not doomed, but reality and feeling are very different. Back to the Jerusalem temple. For all of its conflicts, the temple had been a point of common focus. For Jews in historic Judea and for those in the wider diaspora, for assimilated Hellenists and strict Pietists and the establishment and the populists, even the early Jesus sect in its first decades. Maybe they argued about the temple, maybe they agreed, but they showed up for pilgrimage and they faced it in prayer. After the destruction, there was dispersion and shift. The Jesus sect went beyond Judaism to become Christianity. Some Jewish diasporas faded away, but there was still a Jewish core that managed to shift from animal sacrifice to Torah study. They replaced the Beit El, the house of God, with a Beit Knesset, a synagogue, a house of meeting, literally a house for people. If a new Jerusalem temple were built today, it would be a source of major conflict. Orthodox or non-Orthodox? Woman leaders or exclusion? And sacrificing animals and splashing their blood around again? Really? Tomorrow morning, if you have not eaten, take a look at the traditional Yom Kippur Torah reading in Leviticus 16, describing the ancient observance of the Day of Atonement in all of its bloody gore. No way that would be a common ground in a new Jerusalem temple. And by the way, to build that new Jerusalem temple, you would have to do some demolition first of the Dome of the Rock. Conflict, for sure. What could possibly bring us together today? National divisions are as intense as ever, despite those promises of globalization and a flat world of universal communication. Religiously motivated violence continues to plague the world. Yet secularization without new community can create the bitter loner, the nihilist who lashes out in anger and violence. Democracy seems to be in retreat. The ends of victory increasingly justify the means of any means necessary. In the United States, does anything bring everyone together? Maybe the fact that we are all suspicious of everyone else, but that's hardly a basis for common ground. There is not even one national pastime anymore. If anything, the most watched national sport has changed from baseball to football. Columnist George Will says that American football combines the two worst features of American life: violence punctuated by committee meetings. There is no must-watch TV, no water cooler conversation over the same shows that everyone watches. We see different news. We laugh at different jokes. We understand the same events differently. We react to the same crises in opposite directions. We are not even in the office the same days of the week anymore. Is pumpkin spice season wonderful or awful or meh? Yes. Does a shooting demonstrate there should be more guns or fewer guns? Yes. Our opponents are dangerous enemies. Disagreement is schism. Conflicting evidence is heresy. Debate is division. Consensus is conformity. We are always right, and they are always evil. Our society is the house divided that cannot stand, and we cannot stand it. Yet if the house is falling down, is that an opportunity to rebuild? Back to destroy Jerusalem. Some years after the disaster, Rabbi Akiva and some colleagues went to see the ruins. When they saw the site of the burned temple, the rabbis tore their clothing in mourning. When they arrived on the Temple Mount, they saw a fox run out from the spot that had been the Holy of Holies, where the high priest went on Yom Kippur to atone for Israel's sins. Akiva's colleagues began weeping, but Akiva laughed. Astonished, they asked him, "Why are you laughing?" He replied, "Why are you crying?" Through their tears, they said that in the good times, this place was meant only for the high priest, and now even a fox may walk here undisturbed. Why did Akiva laugh? Because if the prophecies that the temple and all of Jerusalem would be destroyed had come true, then he had faith in other prophecies, they would also be restored. As for me, I have no faith in prophets or prophecies. I do not look into the dark expecting miraculous salvation. I do know from experience that sometimes it is darkest before the dawn, and that out of disaster can come rebirth. One of the great challenges of our era is grappling with the problems of the past and the present. The only way to start to heal is to open the wounds, to give the injury air and sunlight, and only then attempt to heal and move on. Candid conversations about our ethnic and racial history and their lasting impacts today are difficult, and they are necessary. So too are hard conversations about, for example, the impact of immigration on those who are actually employed in construction and service industries. The undocumented are not competing with lawyers or with rabbis. If we assume that all of our opponents are inherently bad people, unscrupulous enemies who will say and do anything to enact their evil agenda, then we will have no empathy for their grievances, even if justified. There is plenty of energy out there. What we lack is empathy, the willingness to listen. The risk of listening is that we might change our minds. We might question our side's priorities. Yet if we show that we can listen, we might also be heard in turn. We can attempt new solutions to problems we never understood before. Perhaps we can even find that common ground that seems so elusive in our society today. In the aftermath of Jerusalem's destruction, two of the most important rabbis were Rabban Gamliel II, the head of the rabbinic court, and Rabbi Joshua, the sage of his age. Gamliel decreed that the new moon had been seen for Rosh Hashanah, but Joshua thought Gamliel had made a mistake with his witnesses. We know from Rosh Hashanah how tricky witnesses for the new moon can be. When Gamliel heard this, he commanded Joshua to visit him, carrying his walking staff and his money on the day Joshua calculated to be Yom Kippur. In other words, Gamliel commanded Joshua to break what Joshua thought would be the holiest day in the calendar. Joshua was in distress. What should he do? Rabbi Akiva tried to console him. In Leviticus, he mentioned, it is written, "These are the appointed seasons of God, sacred gatherings which you will proclaim in their season." You will proclaim. In other words, whenever you proclaim them to be, whether or not you proclaim them accurately, that's when the festivals shall be. Eventually, on the day Joshua believed was Yom Kippur, he took his staff and his money, and he went to visit Gamliel. Upon seeing Joshua, Gamliel stood up and kissed him on the head and said, Bo b'shalom, Rabbi v'talmidi. Come in peace, my teacher and my student. My teacher in wisdom and my student, because you accepted my word despite your disagreement. You are my teacher, you are my student. I listen to you and you listen to me. I speak and you speak. Reality, society, community, they all depend on what we agree on. We have no revelation, no absolute authority, no unquestionable center, no Jerusalem temple, no gravity stopping everything from spinning away into disorder. No gravity, that is, except for our connection to each other. Political philosophers imagined a state of nature where autonomous individuals lived entirely on their own and voluntarily limited their absolute freedom for the benefits of society, like safety and support and fellowship. In reality, there was no state of nature, no Eden, no perfect past of clean agreement. Society has always been messy, a compromise of many agendas, new ideas imposed on old order in gradual and sometimes revolutionary ways. It's all a human construct. Religion was a concept invented by people, and so is money, and so is time, so are love and hate. Human rights is a concept invented by people. Do unto others and do not do unto others, and love your neighbor and do not oppress the stranger, all invented by people. Society depends on us. It falls apart because of us. It hangs together because of us. This does not mean that everyone is automatically welcome everywhere. We need not welcome those who dehumanize us or those we love. We do not need to put ourselves among people who would threaten us or harm us, even as we may find paths to minimal cooperation with those with whom we disagree for the sake of ordered society. The essence of dialogue, the key to social cohesion, what we lack and what we need so much today is that simple approach. You are my teacher and my student. I am your teacher and your student, unless you prove that you cannot listen, in which case, class dismissed. The premise of the Jerusalem temple was false. There is no holiest people of all the peoples, no holiest land, and no holiest spot on that holiest land. No holiest words or holiest language or holiest moment in a calendar that we created. What we experience as special, as powerful, as meaningful, that is our perception, not universal reality. My rabbi Sherwin Wein once wrote, "We are Jews, we are Americans, but above all, we are human beings." Sometimes we forget this truth. Sometimes we think only about our own family. Sometimes we only think about our own friends. We look at other people and see them as strangers. The language they speak is not our own. We turn them into enemies before we give them a chance to become our friends. Our common humanity makes us see the truth. Underneath the different speech, underneath the different costume, every person is a human being. Every person needs the dignity we need. Every person wants the happiness we want. Every person feels what we feel. That is our humanism, a basic understanding of and empathy for the humanity of others. Some think that humanism means worshiping humanity as a god, as if humanity could do what we imagined a god did. The truth is that our humanism gives an honest assessment of the human condition. There is still love in the world, and neighborliness, and respect, and kindness, and generosity. We evolved in families and small clans, and it is difficult to extend those ethics to thousands and millions who claim our allegiance today. But we can. We do. And so do others. Will it be enough? It will have to be the gravity that holds us together. I wish you all a Shana Yoter Tova, a better year in the year just begun.
Thank you for listening to the Kol Hadash podcast. To learn more, support, and membership to Kol Hadash, visit
kolhadash.com. To learn more about secular humanistic Judaism, visit shj.org.